Thanks for joining us for another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. The whole Hoosier Ag Today crew is on the road this week in Kansas City for the annual convention of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. Newsmakers in U.S. agriculture have been here all week with us. We'll hear from them throughout today's show. C.J. Miller reports on the progress of getting E15 approved nationwide and the new president of the National Milk Producers Federation, who is from Indiana. Greg Allen talks Prop 12 with the National Pork Producers Council. Andy Eubank takes a look at the grain markets, and Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin brings you the Indiana Farm Forecast in less than 10 minutes. We begin today's show with USDA Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation Richard Fordyce. He and I sat down on Friday to record an episode of the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast from Hoosier Ag Today. He's excited that the government is back open and they're getting back to work.
I went through the longest government shutdown, you know, in the first Trump administration when I was the administrator of the Farm Service Agency. And you know, in this role, I had to go through Senate confirmation, had a Senate confirmation hearing, had to wait on a vote, and so was confirmed in late September, was sworn in by the secretary, actually here in Kansas City, and then went to Washington on a first day of a shutdown. So, you know, when people talk about a shutdown, I don't know that everyone completely understands what that means, right? Yeah. So, you know, in our case, congressional funding, that intermittent funding that comes from Congress, you know, that's what came to an end. We still had the ability, we learned later on in the shutdown, we had the ability to work on some programs that were funded other ways. And so we can talk about that in a little bit if you want.
Absolutely. And we should mention, this is kind of your backyard. You are a Missouri guy, a farmer from Missouri. And
exactly.
Again, in Trump 1.0, director of the Farm Service Agency, and that's how we kind of got to know each other.
Right,
you were
right.
Wandering the state with Steve Brown, the Indiana
right.
executive director. And now that you're in this role, let's talk about some of those things, because some decisions had to be made, and it's not as though you had the full width and breadth of your organization, because most of the employees were furloughed, just some of the top-level employees, the secretary, the deputy secretary, and undersecretaries got to continue working. And so what did you discover during that shutdown that you were still allowed to do, and how did that come about?
Yeah, well, you did mention Steve Brown, and I want to give Brownie a shout out. You know, he's back as state executive director in Indiana again. Great leader in agriculture. You know, we're happy that he agreed to come back a second time. So
coming out of retirement,
it was like
Michael Jordan just coming around.
I know. I don't think he can dunk like Michael Jordan.
I don't think so either.
But anyway, good to have Brownie back. You know, so farm production and conservation is made up primarily of three agencies, NRCS, FSA, and RMA. So our mission area was a little unique because, for example, RMA, you know, is that really good demonstration of a public-private partnership, right? You know, a lot of the policy and compliance and those kinds of things happen within the agency leadership. But the delivery of the program is done by independent crop insurance agents, right? So RMA was really, I wouldn't say completely unfazed, but the activity and being able to administer the programs continued pretty much uninterrupted because of that private partnership with crop insurance companies and agents. NRCS, while we were able to be able to do things that, you know, would help in cases of risk to property or to lives, so watershed protection program and some other programs, they were allowed to continue within NRCS. FSA, when the shutdown happened, we shut down. And so offices were closed as they were with NRCS. And then some days after the shutdown continued, we thought, you know, there might be some things within the FSA office, so mail, incoming mail and things that we probably ought to check on. And so we actually deployed a person, not in every office, but covered every office to get the mail, look at things. Do we have a legal notice? Is there something we need to respond to? So we did that for a number of days and then actually continued to investigate what our authorities might be under a shutdown and got legal opinions that we could go in on a limited basis, so two people per office, to help administer programs that were funded by the Commodity Credit Corporation. So that was a funding. So that was a funding pool that existed, did not have really anything to do with the shutdown. It was limited dollars.
Right.
But we were able to work on CCC programs. So as some examples in FSA, you know, ARC and PLC. So we were able to bring folks in, you know, have them sign and certify for ARC and PLC payments, get those out the door. Also, really important, you know, not only in Indiana, but across the country, and maybe even more important, like in the South and Southeast, were marketing assistance loans. Almost all of the cotton, peanuts, you know, the initial marketing of those commodities is done through marketing assistance loans, and certainly, you know, corn and soybean growers in Indiana utilize those programs as well. So being able to open up the marketing assistance loan program and start to administer that was really important as well.
Hear more of my conversation with USDA Undersecretary Richard Fordyce in the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. Find it at HoosierAgToday.com or watch it on our Facebook page. Let's shift our attention now to the markets. To break down what was an up and down week, here's Andy Eubank.
Thanks, Eric. The markets did all come back to about even, really only beans finishing just to the high side. We'll have those final numbers coming up. We begin, though, with market analysis. I grabbed that in the middle of the session from Brian Basting, Advanced Trading. A choppy and mixed end to a choppy week in trade for corn, soybeans, and wheat. And Brian, we did sell off to start this session, have come back as we speak in the middle of the session to about even, maybe even working higher in some cases. Overall, with more sales to China announced during the course of the week, evaluate what you thought of market movement throughout.
Thanks for having me, Andy. We'll start with the beans because it does seem like that's been the headliner, as it were, this week with the sales of China. As you said, China is starting to really aggressively purchase U.S. beans, so a couple million tons now on the books here for 25-26 officially, and maybe some more than that, given the unknown sales that were announced last Friday. Regardless, it did send that January bean contract, Andy, to the highest level it had been since May of 2024, up to nearly $11.70 a bushel. So what we're seeing is a little bit of a pullback now, a little bit of a profit-taking pullback. We are seeing some rain develop in drier areas in northern Brazil, which is ideal because those areas have been the driest of the century, as a matter of fact, Andy, up in Mato Grosso, Mato Piba, Goiás, which are some major growing areas, have been the driest in more than a quarter century. But no cause for excitement yet. December is the critical month for pod set and pod fill. So the combination of liquidation, short, long liquidation, some profit taking, and the rainfall that's forecast over the next week in Brazil fuels some sell-off, some weakness here in beans. Corn is more or less chopping along here. We did see December back off from those highs that were made last week, and we're seeing more consolidation. I'm waiting to see if we'll see some end users take advantage of this pullback. But regardless, we are seeing a very strong export program. We're looking at the highest weekly shipments this week of corn.
Brian Basting commentary. Brian is at Advanced Trading. His number is 309-664-2314. Now, the Friday settlements, very close to even, down just a penny in corn December at 425.5. March corn, 437.5, down a quarter. May down a half cent, 444.75. And up in beans, January, 1125, a gain of 2.5 cents. March up 2.25, 1134.25. May, 1143.25, up a penny and 3 quarters. Flat in wheat, December unchanged at 527. March, 539.75, down a penny. December live cattle, 214.45. That was down 27 cents, a quiet day overall for cattle, a rarity. Lean hogs, December, 77.80, down $1.67. Much more still to come on the weekend show. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
After years of dedication, Jim and Jody Johnson are retiring and selling their quality farm equipment through Purple Wave's December 30th Ag Auction. Don't miss their 2024 John Deere ExactEmerge 1775 NT Planter and 2019 John Deere S760 Combine. See the equipment yourself during open inspections at Osage, Iowa, on Wednesday, December 17th and Monday, December 29th, both from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Visit purplewave.com for a complete listing. Purple Wave Auction, straight, simple, sold.
Our weather pattern is going to go through a bunch of changes here over the next week or so. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook. It's brought to you by the Indiana Ag Nutrient Alliance. If you've ever watched the show Doctor Who and seen the Doctor transition or transform at the end of one character playing the role to another, Mother Nature is going to be going through that same kind of process here over the next week or so. Regeneration, they call it in Doctor Who. It's probably not good to use that term here in the weather, but the process is going to be the same. We're going to see almost everything, and at the end of all of it, we've got a completely different feel to our forecast pattern. That's what's going on here the next couple of weeks. Let's start with this weekend. After gray, cloudy, it made me mad, weather the past few days. I'm not ready for this. I'm not ready for the gray, the just the cold that clings to you, even though it was slightly above normal. Wasn't ready for that, but it was here. After that, I think we put together here a decent weekend. Clouds giving way to sunshine today over most of the Hoosier State, and tomorrow is going to be partly sunny. Monday starts partly sunny. So we're decent on temperatures, decent on sky conditions here as we move forward. But Monday also features an increase in cloud cover again. Overnight Monday night into Tuesday, a frontal boundary comes through, gives us some rain. Not a lot, few hundredths to half an inch. Maybe there's an outside three-quarter inch total in one or two spots, but that's not the norm. We see light moisture coming through, and then a Tuesday late afternoon, evening, we just stay cloudy, but we're done with precipitation. Wednesday, high pressure gets in here, but it's cooler high pressure, because that frontal boundary that came through Monday night, Tuesday, ushered in the cold air. So we see partly to mostly sunny skies Wednesday and Thanksgiving Thursday. If you're traveling for Thanksgiving, it looks like it's going to be just fine. I will tell you, though, make sure you take that coat or jacket because it is cooler. That cool Canadian high pressure sits through Thanksgiving Day. Getting into Friday, Black Friday, if you're heading out shopping, once again, probably a decent day. Starts with sunshine, clouds increase in the afternoon, and late evening through the overnight, we see on again, off again, rain and wet snow potential. Remember, it's chilly here, and so we have the chances of both rounds of precipitation into Saturday morning and midday. Saturday afternoon, evening, high pressure comes back in. We clear out, but that was a reinforcing shot of cold Canadian air. It sits here through the rest of the weekend and into early next week. Monday the 1st, we have a rain-snow mix situation coming through as warm air surges from the south, clashing with the cold air to the north. Cold air eventually wins for Wednesday, Thursday. Another massive storm system coming together Thursday, Friday with another round of rain and wet snow. And once again, Mother Nature bringing winter back Friday the 5th into Saturday the 6th. Strong cold air coming in from the north. I'm Ryan Martin.
Harvest reminds us that farming is a team sport. From neighbors lending a hand to partners sharing know-how, teamwork is essential and is how Indiana Ag Nutrient Alliance operates on its mission of enabling viable farms, healthy soil, and clean water. Indiana's ag and commodity groups, alongside ISDA and conservation leaders, work together to vet practices that improve the environment while protecting farmers' bottom line. Helping Indiana farmers thrive is a win for all.
Thanks for staying with us for this special edition Hoosier Ag This Week as the HAT team broadcasts live from Kansas City at the annual National Association of Broadcasting Conference. As we continue on with the stories that impacted your week, I got the opportunity to talk with the National Pork Producers Council on Proposition 12 compliance. U.S. farmers say they're feeling the squeeze nearly 2 years after Proposition 12 fully went into effect. The measure requires more space for breeding pigs, egg-laying hens, and veal calves. While animal rights advocates call it a major victory, many producers say the cost of compliance is taking a heavy toll. According to Seth Mitchell with National Pork Producers Council,
the National Pork Producers Council pursued legal action all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court to try to overturn Proposition 12. The Supreme Court ultimately ruled that this was the responsibility of Congress to fix. And so since then, NPPC has been active out in D.C. on Capitol Hill, lobbying Congress for a solution to Proposition 12. You know, in addition to the effects of that rule itself on pork producers across the country, what we're really concerned about at the end of the day is a patchwork of regulation and the precedent that this sets for other states potentially to follow suit, creating more arbitrary housing standards across the country and more uncertainty for producers about how they do business. push for Congress to pass a farm bill, recognizing that although a lot of our appropriations priorities were included in that resolution this past year, there's still some policy issues that need addressed in a farm bill, and this is the avenue that MPPC is pursuing for Proposition 12.
For now, farmers say they'll keep adapting, but they hope lawmakers will consider additional support to help keep local agriculture alive. America's dairy industry continues to face a number of different challenges. C.J. Miller addressed some of those challenges with the new chairman of the National Milk Producers Federation.
I think that people that aren't in the industry don't know what they don't know. You know, and USDA is a hard hill to get over.
And that's Greg Gunthorpe, who raises hogs, turkeys, and ducks on his farm in LaGrange County. He also owns his own USDA-inspected processing plant right on his farm. So when he was invited to meet last week with U.S. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins in Washington, he suggested several ways that the U.S. can strengthen and improve the meat processing industry.
The first one is the subsidies, the indirect, direct, and the procurement funds of the federal government are all pointed in an opposite direction if we want local and regional food. Then I always like to talk about antitrust enforcement. This whole sector is dominated by a handful of very, very large players that makes it difficult for the little guys to find a place into that market as a wholesaling either to retailers or to food service.
He says another issue that needs addressed is inspection reform.
The system tends to be set up largely to deal with the largest of processing plants. And I think we're all well aware that the smallest players in any industry tend to be the ones that have the hardest time dealing with regulations. I think that's an unintended consequence. Then I like to talk about truth in labeling. In general, the little guys fit into this space by selling into the niches, and big guys have invaded most of our niches without making the same changes that the little guys have in production practices.
Gunthorpe said he was encouraged by his meeting with Secretary Rollins, but he strongly encourages other small independent meat and poultry processors to also meet with their lawmakers to enact change for the industry.
You know, that cliche that things are ran by the people that show up is 100% true. And I think especially the smaller, the independent, the ones that aren't part of the big four have to get there to have our voices heard. Because I think that the industry has its lobbying groups and has its people that live in Washington, D.C. So they absolutely need to hear our concern.
Check out more of our conversation. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm C.J. Miller.
Thank you, C.J. The Indiana 4-H Foundation once again opened doors for young Hoosiers at its annual scholarship program luncheon last weekend, offering thousands of dollars in educational support to students who've grown through Indiana 4-H. Each year, the foundation awards more than $100,000 in scholarships to 4-H members and alumni across the state. These awards recognize more than just good grades. They honor leadership, service, responsibility, and the real-world skills learned through years of 4-H projects, fairs, and community involvement. Hoosier Ag Today was proud to sponsor the Indiana 4-H Foundation's Communication Accomplishment Scholarship. This year's recipient was Chloe Riddle of Johnson County.
This is my ninth year in 4-H, so when I graduate, I'll be a 10-year member, which is really exciting. I think 4-H is a really great opportunity for people to be able to build community. I personally have enjoyed participating in my club and junior leaders, and this year I'm one of the county ambassadors. So there's a lot of opportunities to be involved in 4-H, and I think it's really fantastic. You learn a lot of life skills like communication, time management, and leadership skills, and it's a really fantastic opportunity to grow yourself and your community.
Students can apply for a wide range of scholarships, from general academic awards to specialized funds focused on agriculture, leadership, and career development. Many of these scholarships are made possible by individual donors, county 4-H endowments, and longtime supporters who believe deeply in the impact of youth programs. For Riddle,
I think I want to be go into Purdue University to get a degree in vet nursing, so that's a really exciting opportunity.
Indiana 4-H leaders say the goal is simple:
make higher education more accessible, and reward the kind of character and dedication that 4-H instills. Last year alone, more than 70 Hoosier students received scholarships, some helping first-generation college students, others supporting young people pursuing technical degrees or careers in the ag industry.
There are probably a ton of people who are applying for this scholarship, and me out of all those people, because there's only, I think, two people who got the communication scholarship, and I was one of them. So I felt very honored and very special and grateful that 4-H gave me that opportunity.
For many young Hoosiers, these scholarships don't just lighten the financial load. They help propel the next generation of leaders, innovators, and community builders.
You can find all these stories and more at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Greg Allen. Stick around. There's plenty more Hoosier Ag this week to come.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
Hopefully, we're not adding to any wait times. We don't. The test only takes 15 minutes. We're hoping that it allows those premiums to be paid on site after the testing, as opposed to, hey, they loaded their grain. Now you lose transparency and some confidence when all that grain gets consolidated from not just your fields, but others. They send it off batches for lab testing. Then you get your premium later to see if it passed or not. Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And so that's been a big challenge we're working to provide. And so having that validation from the farmer side, like, hey, yeah, we see this as a tool that's needed. A lot of other people getting a look at how we're approaching this problem and our solution towards it means a lot to our team and what Nanobios is trying to accomplish.
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back, and thanks for joining us on Hoosier Ag This Week. We're on the road at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, Missouri. And here at the convention, trade is a hot topic. A panel discussion on trade in the Trump 2.0 era was held Wednesday morning. The question posed was, can farmers withstand the storm while trade is sorted out by the administration? The answer from this Michigan farmer was, how long do we have to wait?
How long until we do relieve some of this uncertainty?
That's Jana Fritz, member of the American Soybean Association and chair of the U.S. Soybean Export Council.
Farmers want trade, right? There's been this mantra out in the industry, trade, not aid. But undoubtedly, we're at a point today, and our economic research from ASA and USEC would show that farmers are struggling. And we're at a point where some of these things need to be finalized. We need to see impacts to the market, or we will require some sort of aid to the farmer to stay in business.
Corn farmer and director of trade policy for the U.S. Grains and Bioproducts Council, Andrew Brandt, says a larger concern is the growing competition for the marketplace. Brandt says Brazil has somewhere around 100 million acres they could put into grain production in the coming years.
When you run the numbers, and it won't go all to corn, but if, say, a third of it went to corn, it would be equivalent to roughly bringing another Iowa worth of corn into the global market. So as I look at this, I see the rise of Brazil, the rise of other countries adopting biotech like China, where they're going to just grow more of their own corn. I see that as a far bigger impact on the price I will receive to help me make my payments on my farms versus this trade ruckus.
CJ Miller is here in Kansas City with me as well, and he joins us now as he reports on the continued push to expand the ethanol industry.
Emily Score is president and CEO of Growth Energy, which advocates for the ethanol industry. She told me what it will take to make year-round E15 permanent.
It is going to take an act of Congress, which is not an easy thing to get done, but I am very optimistic. We are very close. We've had a really good year for E15. California approved it. It is now going to be available in all 50 states. We just need it available all 12 months of the year.
She said the two things are currently working in favor of ethanol expansion.
One is the state of the farm economy. What will this do for the U.S. corn farmer that has a huge crop, that needs support, that needs strong corn prices? So the fact that this is a U.S. market for U.S. commodities, and two, the fact that it lowers fuel prices. Those two things are so top of mind, and I think they will work to our advantage as we try to get Congress to do something, most likely probably the end of January when they move the next big fiscal fiscal bill.
She also shared how sustainable aviation fuel is the next big area of growth for corn producers and ethanol.
There's a huge global conversation about that as countries like Japan are looking to make it and they're thinking, I want U.S. ethanol to be my feedstock, but also domestically. And so we know we finally have an ethanol plant here in the U.S. that's making alcohol to jet. And so that's exciting. That is a long-term market opportunity for us as an industry. We still have to get through the technology. We've got to get strong financing and we need some incentives to get the economics in line. But I think collectively there's some excitement that that is a long-term market opportunity because the aviation industry wants to decarbonize. They're going to need the volume that we can produce as a feedstock.
Read the full story and hear more of my conversation with Emily Score with Growth Energy. It's at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm CJ Miller.
All right, CJ, thanks. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins was in Indiana recently and told Hoosier Ag Today that the reported $10 to $15 billion plan to aid farmers impacted by the China trade standoff would have to be worked out once the government reopened due to staffing. Well, the staff is back now. And?
We are working on it, Eric. And as you know, things have changed over the past several weeks.
That's U.S. Deputy Secretary of Agriculture Stephen Vaden.
The president negotiated a trade agreement with China. He also negotiated trade agreements with multiple Southeast Asian countries, which are bringing millions of more tons of demand.
Vaden says they'll need to take those agreements into account when doing calculations for any aid package put forward.
The entire goal of any program should be to provide a bridge to 2026 and to reflect current market conditions, which thankfully have improved. Soybean prices are at 15-month highs. That's a positive. But we will need to take that new data into account as we measure the amount of aid that we can and should provide as part of our program.
Many farmers worry that even though an agreement has been reached, that China won't fulfill its obligations, pointing back to the Phase One deal struck during President Trump's first term. Vaden says he, quote, 1,000% understands why farmers would be hesitant for China to keep their word. He points to one big difference this time around.
Beijing stopped keeping its word when the occupant in the White House changed. Joe Biden didn't do anything to enforce the Phase One deal, and he also didn't negotiate a single new trade agreement with any country, no matter how small, during his entire tenure. This is the first year of President Trump's second term. He's got three more years to go. The agreement that he has made with the Chinese government covers all three of those years, and he's going to be in the White House to enforce it. If there's one thing I'm certain your listeners know, is that if you make an agreement with President Trump and then you violate that agreement, he doesn't forget it and he doesn't allow you to slide by with it.
And President Trump announced earlier this week that more information will be coming on that package soon. Hear more of my conversation with Deputy Secretary Vaden at HoosierAgToday.com. And that does it for this edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. On the road from Kansas City, we thank you for joining us. We hope things are going well for you back in Indiana. We're coming back soon. We'll talk to you Monday on Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.